Let's go back to 2006, the year that Twitter was launched. Saddam Hussein is captured and executed. Google purchases YouTube for $1.6 billion in stock. And Pluto is downgraded from a planet to dwarf planet. 13 years later, the world is dramatically different, and the way in which we do diplomacy has substantially changed, thanks to technology and social media. Today, Twitter has more than 326 million active monthly users. From the Arab Spring in 2011, to the US presidential election in 2016, to clapbacks on Twitter between countries like Israel and Iran in 2018, world leaders, MFAs, and diplomats have realized that what they share online can shape events offline. According to Twiplomacy, 93% of all UN member states have an official presence on Twitter, and between May 2017 and May 2018, world leaders sent more than 250,000 original tweets. It takes a lot less than 280 characters to realize that digital diplomacy is here to stay. This special episode of Persona Grata features Yiftach Curiel, who heads the Israel MFA's Digital Diplomacy Department, which manages more than 30 social media channels in 5 languages, including English, Arabic, Farsi, Spanish, Russian, and Hebrew. And Ilan Manur, a PhD student at Oxford University, specializing in digital diplomacy. Ilan and Yiftach sat down to discuss the challenges and opportunities for diplomacy in the digital age and what the future holds for the ever-evolving digital diplomacy field. Welcome to Persona Grata, the official podcast of the Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I'm your host, Tamar Schwartzbard. Before we delve into this week's episode, here's a small request. If you enjoy Persona Grata and the content which we create with all of you wonderful listeners in mind, help us reach more people by rating us on iTunes, sending your favorite episodes to other podcast and diplomacy enthusiasts, and by following us on SoundCloud. Now let's get back to the fascinating field that is digital diplomacy.
Digital diplomacy, today we view it as the continuation of diplomacy by other means, as a way to exert influence and basically fulfill the goals of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Yiftach Curiel heads the Israel MFA's Digital Diplomacy Department. As I mentioned earlier, the Israel MFA manages 30 social media channels across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Telegram, and in 5 languages. The Digital Diplomacy Department is one of the Israel MFA's largest departments, dedicated to increasing the influence and reach that Israel has on social media. Israel is ranked by Twiplomacy as the 10th most followed foreign ministry online in 2018.
Yeah, we were definitely one of the first ministries both to open a website and then to later on open a Twitter account and Facebook and social media presence. I think Israel is, as is well known, a very high-tech savvy country, and we are always looking for relative advantages in reaching, you know, wider audiences.
Israeli culture has definitely had an influence on the way in which the Israel MFA does diplomacy. Israelis are bold and innovative, and that lends itself to diplomats who are creative and willing to take risks and try new things, which is particularly useful when it comes to diplomacy on digital platforms.
Generally speaking, diplomacy is a relatively conservative profession. It's a profession where people learn to be discreet and to be very careful with what they do. But as Israelis, we are more prone to breaking the rules, to being creative. And in that way, I think Israeli diplomats have had an easier time adopting social media. And we as a ministry as well have had an easier time in disseminating this technology and using it across our embassies.
Ilan Manur is a PhD student at Oxford University whose research specializes in digital diplomacy. He studies the way in which governments and MFAs use digital platforms to get their messages across and promote foreign policy. He also happens to be Israeli. Earlier this month, Yiftach and Ilan sat down and discussed some of the topics at the forefront of digital diplomacy today. Their discussion was recorded outside in the center of Israel's innovation ecosystem, Tel Aviv, so we apologize for the sound in advance.
My name is Yiftach Kuriel, the Digital Diplomacy Director at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I'm very, very happy to be here today with Ilan Manor, one of the foremost digital diplomacy scholars currently at Oxford University. Ilan has just finished writing a book researching digital diplomacy. Ilan, can you sum up for our audience the main findings that you saw?
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me to chat with you today about the topic of digital diplomacy. In the book, I try to explore the relationship between online and offline diplomacy. And so it's not really a type of diplomacy, as has been suggested in the past by terms such as digital diplomacy or diplomacy 2.0. But what we're really seeing is that digital technologies, once they enter into a diplomatic institution, they alter the values and norms of an institution, for instance, a willingness to share information. They impact working routines, such as transferring information in real time to diplomats across the globe. And they influence how diplomats imagine their craft. For instance, diplomats now believe that they must practice a form of real-time diplomacy.
This is a field that's very new. I mean, it's just a few years old, essentially. So in a way, it's hard to predict where it's going to lead us, isn't it? I mean, the platforms are new, they're changing all the time, we're adopting new platforms. We started out with Facebook, we're on Twitter now, we're on Instagram.
Along with the rapid changes in the digital landscape, we also seem to have some fixtures in it. And while I think social networks may change over time, this basic phenomenon of platforms in which people communicate with one another and lead very public lives is not going to disappear. It's ingrained into our society now. The lives of individuals, the lives of diplomats have to be played out on a public stage. But if we think about the next stage, I would probably say three main developments. The first is augmented and virtual reality, which I think will become increasingly important and could be used by diplomats for very exciting things. For instance, imagine that you could transport your citizen via virtual reality to Crimea, and he could stand in Crimea and look around at what's happening and kind of get his own idea of what's happening and how this crisis is unfolding. The second thing is probably going to be machine learning, in the sense that foreign ministries will use AI, algorithms, and machine learning to sift through vast amounts of data and grab the data that they're interested in, whether it's how people are talking about your nation, or do I have citizens that need help following an earthquake? And the third is probably the increased professionalization of diplomats.
I think we're headed that way. And for Israel, I guess I would add one more thing. Digital diplomacy enables us today to reach audiences that we were barred from reaching before, especially on our Arab and our Persian platforms. These are platforms with millions of users with which we can bypass traditional media that's often hostile across the Middle East, or governments with which we don't have diplomatic relations. And we can reach people directly, show them what Israel is, show them, you know, Israel's solutions for some of the problems in the region. And so we're proud of the work that we're doing, especially on these platforms, that is really digital diplomacy enables us to go there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real use of digital diplomacy or digital tools to overcome limitations, whether it's a critical media landscape or lack of bilateral ties. The only issue there for some foreign ministries is the resources. For the Israeli Foreign Ministry, I know that they dedicate substantial resources to actually engaging with people in the Arab world. But if you think of other foreign ministries who might be smaller, if they want to use digital the same way, suddenly the issue of resources comes to the fore. We actually need someone sitting on the computer, interacting with these people, creating media, translating it in real time, offering our analysis of world events. And for some of the smaller foreign ministries, it's becoming quite difficult. And this is interesting because in the beginning of the process, everyone said digital diplomacy is cost-effective diplomacy. Instead of building an embassy, we'll build a Twitter account.
Yeah.
So you're seeing this new distribution of power and of wealth between foreign ministries.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. I mean, we opened just a few weeks ago a new Twitter account, Israel in the Gulf, right? An area with which we don't have official diplomatic ties. And yet, we're seeing this account grow very rapidly. We see many people that are interested in what's happening in Israel. So again, it gives us, you know, bridges to a different place. We opened last year a Facebook account dedicated to the Iraqi community as well. That account is doing quite well. And so I think, you know, this is part of the work that important for us, and it still is cost effective. You're right, we're not always able to answer all of the comments and engage with everybody who's interested, but on the whole, I think we are able to present Israel to a population that has not seen it before in that way.
Do you feel that there's anything substantially different here? Because I mean, Israel operated radio channels that broadcast to the Arab world, and these radio shows included satire or news or kind of presenting the Israeli narrative of world affairs to our neighboring countries. So is the use of Twitter to interact with Iraqis or Egyptians different substantially from just 1950s radio shows when Israel talked to the Arab world via, you know, satire or whatever?
Mm-hmm. It's a good point. I think, you know, the radio, much like television, is a one-way medium that you listen to what you are being broadcast. And this is a two-way medium, and we can adapt it to what people want to hear. We can see what people are interested in, what they engage mostly with, and adapt our content accordingly. We can actually talk to people and make real connections. You know, people write us in the comments, I'd love to visit Israel, I'm a businessman and I'm looking for these kinds of opportunities, and we send him or her in the right direction. And in that way, it enables us both to kind of collect open source intelligence and see what people in the region are interested in, and be there for them and kind of open avenues for them of getting in touch and of you know, doing business or culture or whatever it is that they want to do with Israel. So I think that's a huge change. I want to ask you, you research foreign ministries' work around the world, but you're also Israeli. And what is your take on the work that the Israeli MFA does? What are the things you think we should do better?
In most of the research that I do, I look at the Israeli foreign ministry and I've compared it to some other foreign ministries around the world. I mean, it's quite obvious that it's one of the leading foreign ministries in the world in terms of using digital, and in very different ways. So using digital to project a certain narrative of Israel, using digital to interact with global populations, using digital to interact with citizens of states with whom we don't have diplomatic ties, but even using digital for consular aid. Mm-hmm. Or using digital for writing algorithms and using algorithms to burst echo chambers of hate and anti-Semitism. Mm-hmm. So the Israeli foreign ministry is probably one of the most active and most diverse actors in the digital realm. I guess that the only thing that I would question is the balance between kind of real-time diplomacy and strategic diplomacy. So it's very easy to get bogged down in the daily events that occur in a nation or in a region. And God knows that we live in a region that basically every day there's so much news going on and so much need to respond to these news, that very soon the MFA's social media empire, let's call it, can get bogged down in just commenting on a series of events. And then the strategic approach to digital diplomacy gets lost. So how do we want to use digital? What is this month's emphasis? Who are we communicating with next month? What's the social media campaign in 3 months from now? And I think that there are some foreign ministries that really try to balance the need to respond to national and international events alongside achieving predefined and measurable public diplomacy goals.
Mm-hmm. I think that we try as much as we can to work in what we call campaign mode, so that we're not just putting information out there, but from the outset, you know, we determine what is the goal. And the goal can be both online and an offline one. And then later on, see if we reached those benchmarks. And the benchmarks could be from actually achieving a certain diplomatic goal to, you know, getting a certain number of articles published in the traditional media, for example, as a result of the online activity. And so we try to do that as much as we can, but it's not always possible still. And I think this has happened in Israel generally, not just in the foreign ministry. In Israel, we are a country where events overtake one another at an amazing rate. And so we are always kind of dealing with the most urgent and not necessarily the most important. And in that way, it was always inspiring when I was serving in London to see the British government, and specifically the civil service, there in its capacity to plan years ahead and carry out, you know, major programs that are not necessarily going to yield anything in the next year or two. And so that's a big challenge for us.
I think for some ministries, we are seeing this transition from online for the sake of online and just measuring online to being much more clearer by first asking, what do we want to achieve? What's the offline goal? Now, what's the online way that we can go about it?
Mm-hmm.
And I especially see some foreign ministries, by the way, especially in the Baltic states, going through the process of, fine, we want to comment on this statement by Russia, or we want to comment on this action by Belarus, but how do we comment through the prism of our online campaign? So it's not detached. Mm-hmm. We now have a year-long campaign that is supposed to demonstrate the close ties between Baltic states and America, and something just happened that Russia said, we're not just going to comment on it, but we're going to comment on it through the prism of the campaign. And then you maintain the structure of the general campaign while also commenting on everyday events.
Mm-hmm. There's always a paradox, I feel, when you use social media. You want to be interesting, you want to reach as many people as possible, but then you see that the most interesting things on social media, you know, are videos of cats and animals. And so what do? Do you have a diplomat cat like the FCO does? Are you in danger of kind of slipping to the lowest common denominator? How do you make good digital diplomacy that's both interesting, in depth, and, you know, is going to reach a wide audience?
Well, I mean, first let's talk about the logic. We see that some embassies really do use videos of cats, and we are also seeing more and more embassies and foreign ministries that are using satire and humor.
Exactly.
You remember, I think, the map that the Canadian mission to NATO published, helping Russian soldiers not get lost in Ukraine. The Russian embassy to the UK publishing a tweet about Barack Obama with the words lame duck on it. So what's the logic? First, the logic is we need to break our algorithmic confines. If you're an embassy and you have 20,000 followers, when you tweet, your tweet is going to be read only by those 20,000 followers and people who have expressed some kind of interest in your work in diplomacy and international relations. That's quite limited. Now, if you want to practice public diplomacy, you need to reach the wider public. So you go for satire, you go for humor, or you go for things that you know are going to be viral, such as a funny selfie or a cat. The second thing is that in the digital society, every individual online becomes a brand. And all brands need to distinguish themselves from one another. So we see foreign ministries or embassies that adopt a kind of lighter attitude towards diplomacy, and that way they separate themselves from other embassies and attract more followers. Like you say, the risk is, do we really go for the lowest common denominator? And so I would say that probably things like satire and humor and a bit of irony are legitimate and probably a good tool in order to increase your reach, but they have to be used strategically. I mean, what am I really trying to achieve when I go for the lighter side of diplomacy? And probably the best example that we've had recently actually came from the Israeli embassy to Washington, D.C. You remember that the Ayatollah of Iran tweeted that Israel is a cancer and it will be, you know, destroyed or annihilated, whatever. And the Israeli embassy to Washington responded with a gif from the movie Mean Girls saying, why are you so obsessed with me? And that went absolutely viral, but it went viral in the sense that it also helped Israeli diplomacy. There were newspaper articles about that tweet from India to Australia to Europe to South America, but they all included the Ayatollah's threat to annihilate Israel, and they spoke about the relationship between Israel and Iran. So what you did here is you went viral, but you went viral in order to expose people to A, your narrative, B, your foreign policy priorities, and C, shape how people understand the relations between Israel and Iran. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to go for the lighter side, don't go for the lowest common denominator, like you said. Think about strategy. Think about what you're trying to achieve and why you want to go viral. Don't go viral for the sake of going viral.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree completely. And I think today also we are seeing almost unimaginable things. I mean, if I take an example from yesterday, you know, we tweeted about Instagram shutting down the account of Qasem Soleimani, the head of the IRGC, following the US terror designation at the beginning of the week. We tweeted it on our Persian account, and yesterday we got a response from the Minister of Communication of Iran, who was, you know, quote tweeting us, no less, with a quote from Game of Thrones, trying to justify, you know, why Soleimani shouldn't have been shut down. That's something that would have been unheard of just a short time ago, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see how often now countries that don't recognize one another and diplomats that don't officially recognize one another exchange blows on social media. Here we have to ask ourselves, and maybe you can answer this, is this something substantial, or is this just the silver linings, or if you want, the show of digital diplomacy? But digital diplomacy also exists on the level of the stage, right? We do big events, we take a lot of pictures. We suggest that diplomacy is now more transparent because you can see John Kerry and Sergei Lavrov confer with one another behind the scenes in London.
Exactly, yeah.
But is this substantial? Is this really something that's changed in diplomacy, or is this simply the veneer of transparency, the veneer of communication between countries that don't recognize one another?
But I would say it's something else. I would say that the reason that the Iranian minister feels that he must respond to our Persian channel is because he realizes that hundreds of thousands of Iranians are on that channel and that he must be there as well and give that answer. And that shows both the substantial power of our channel and in general the power that digital diplomacy and that the online networks today hold, because I think that in a totalitarian regime like Iran, you know, there's no need to be there in order to preserve your rule, unless you feel that that presence is can potentially endanger your rule. And so in that way, I think there's nothing showy about it. It's a necessity.
Yeah. And I think this is interesting because it brings up another topic that's very interesting these days, which is domestic digital diplomacy. Mm-hmm. And because foreign countries can now relatively easily disseminate messages amongst your citizens, you have to respond to these messages and to make sure that your citizens see it. So what we have more and more is what we call domestic digital diplomacy, in which diplomats interact with their own citizens, whether it's to rebuff arguments by other actors, narrate foreign policies, dispel disinformation, or even rally domestic support for international achievements. And I think that a really interesting example of this was the Obama administration's Twitter account at the Iran deal. And they basically managed a digital diplomacy account for 2 months in order to sell the Iran deal to the American people, thereby ensuring that the deal would be ratified by Congress. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this in more and more countries. Because Israel can interact with Gulf citizens, the Gulf states must respond to what Israel says, but also vice versa, because if the Gulf states or other states can interact with Israeli citizens, then the foreign ministry must respond to what's being said and interact with Israeli citizens. And this is a game changer, because traditionally, foreign ministries face the world with their back to the nation. And so I agree, this is something new in the field of diplomacy, which is really interesting to look at.
Ilan, thank you very much. It was really good having you.
Thank you for hosting me.
Thank you.
So what have we learned from Ilan and Yiftach? That digital diplomacy is never stagnant. With each tweet that's sent, each meme that goes viral, or each hashtag that starts trending, the game of digital diplomacy is constantly changing. But more than that, diplomacy is much more than just likes and shares. Both digital and traditional diplomacy is about the individuals who stand behind the profiles we follow, and there's no digital replacement for that.
People tend to think, digital diplomacy is just part of the story, but we are successful as diplomats when we harness the power of real communities, when we get to know and reach real people. And the digital power is a magnifier, but it's not a replacement to those, core missions.
Thank you to Yiftach Curiel and Ilan Manor for sharing their thoughts on the state of digital diplomacy today. You can follow both of them on Twitter, and we've included links to both of their accounts in the bio of this podcast. Thank you for listening to Persona Grata, and thank you to Rivka Wapner for her help in editing this episode.